When you look at a watch, all the gears all have to be in sync. They all have to be properly functioning for that watch to tell you the time, for that clock to tell you the time and be accurate. For a business, it's very much the same thing. Your operations, your finance, your product, your service, the entire thing has to operate all in sync and all together. And so the future of clockwork will be to touch all the other gears that help a company move and grow. Businesses need to run like clockwork, and they need to use clockwork to do that.
That's a beautiful analogy, though. I like that.
Welcome. We are the Sons of CPAs. Join us as we question the current state of the accounting and tax industry with the next generation professionals leading the space. We are the change agents in an industry fraught with money and inertia. Let's begin the Sons of CPAs with your hosts today, Jason Ackerman and Scott Scarano.
We need a spot in here where we introduce the guest.
You're always doing that. You've always done it, and you hate pronouncing names.
Yeah.
So this is going to be great. This is going to be perfect.
That's why I'm not doing it.
Do it.
I'm going to mess it up, and I'm going to get me too'd. So
I can't say that I could have pronounced the last name, but I definitely told Ackerman how to pronounce your first name.
Anyway, our guest from Clockwork, I'm not going to guess the name. I'm not going to.
It's Fadi Hawatma.
Okay.
Fadi.
Is that a family name? What? How do you? Where did Fadi come from?
It means savior in Arabic.
Oh, nice. That's like a interesting translation to America. It's like a coming to America.
Yeah, well, I was born in Jordan, so immigrating, being an immigrant with a name like Fadi Hawatma in America, especially being in the CPA and the finance industry, has been quite an interesting journey also.
So when did you move to the US?
My parents moved us when I was a toddler. We moved from Jordan, but both my parents were actually educated in the States. My dad went to University of Florida, has his master's in civil engineering, and my mom got her engineering degree from University of Rolla in Missouri.
That's cool. Do you go back?
Yeah. My dad's entire family is there, dad's entire side there. We have a couple houses and properties there still in Jordan. So absolutely, I'm a dual citizen, so I have my citizenship. Jordanian citizenship still, so
that's smart. When the U.S. goes to shit, you can just go over there. Smart.
Yeah, I'm out.
But then you're gonna end
what's like something still. That us stupid Americans like that we don't know about Jordan. It's cool.
Yeah, you know what's the funniest thing is on my Instagram the other day I saw you know a post that what people think about when I tell that I'm from the Middle East, and it's literally an office chair in the middle of the desert. Because people always think of desert and camels and all that stuff, which we absolutely have. It's still there. But we also have some of the most beautiful resorts on the Dead Sea and the Red Sea. And year round, you have pretty much perfect California weather.
I'm sold. Let's go.
Tell us a little bit about how you got into this industry. Are your parents in this industry?
Yeah. So even though both my parents are engineers by trade, we actually ended up owning restaurants in the St. Louis, Missouri area. My dad was not a U.S. citizen yet. I became a U.S. citizen when I was about 10 years old. My dad was here and he was like, listen, I have three kids I need to provide for. And the next best thing was to buy a couple restaurants. And so that's what he did. I grew up in the restaurant industry, literally grew up, you know, small business and growing businesses.
Service industry, you learn a lot of empathy and client service. So I think, you know, I do want to point out that being a background in the service industry, I think you learn a lot about people. Service industry.
This is normal. He just kind of talks for a little bit.
Started recording before 4:20. I would have been all right.
You're a little high right now. I'm going to read everything and you can ad lib.
Yeah, I like this.
Okay.
Let's go. Tax Bandits ad.
Tax Bandits is a modern, full-service tax filing platform. File 1099s, 941s, W-2s, 1095s, and many more additional forms with Tax Bandits' sleek, modern interface. With a few clicks of a button, you can upload your client's tax information directly into Tax Bandits, either with a direct integration with Xero, QuickBooks Online, or use a CSV. Once the data is in Tax Bandits, you can check the recipient's tin with best-in-class tin verification, and then safely and securely deliver to your clients or your client's customers their tax forms.
So that's a great use case. I think I'm going to do that. Tell me about the verification.
Is it secure? It's secure. And when you're in-app, it does it for you automatically. Apparently, you can only like data verify 3 times before it'll deliver. So they'll verify it twice. They figured all that shit out. They'll also mail out your 1099 forms for you for additional fee. Everyone has those clients. They won't ever open their email for the 1099s. You got to mail it to them. You just click a button. Tax bands will handle that for you.
So is it built for accounting firms?
TaxBands is also built for accounting firms. They have completely redesigned their user interface to make it easy for you and your team members to quickly and efficiently deliver tax forms to your clients. Some accounting firm features include managing all your clients from one login. You can have multiple user permissions for your staff, real-time client communication in-app with clients, bulk distribution of recipient codes, and multiple payment options for your firm.
Well, that was recipient copies, not codes. But we don't have a code for them, do we?
No.
So visit TaxBandits 1099.com. I don't even know their website.
It's literally on the next line you're supposed to read.
So get started today by visiting TaxBandits.com.
No, it's great. You know, I wanted to, being an entrepreneur, you know, I started my first company when I was 12 years old.
A 2-year-old in the U.S.
Yeah, that right? Much.
You mean you got your citizenship at 10, and at 12 you started a company.
Yeah, what did you start at 12? What were you doing?
So my first company, 12 years old, was fixing traffic violations. So I went to a college preparatory high school in St. Louis, which, you know, is one of the most prestigious schools. Like Jason Tatum went there, Bradley Beal went there, David Lee went there. So some pretty high profile athletes. And so it's a pretty big name university, and a bunch of rich kids go there and they get cars that are too fast for them, and they get speeding tickets. And so I found a massive need massive gap in the market because they didn't know who to go to fix them. And so one of my cousins was a traffic lawyer, and I was like, perfect. Let me fix all your traffic violations through my lawyer, my cousin. And so I was the middleman between them, literally built that business all the way through high school and into college.
You were hooking that up and getting some commission on the side.
Yeah.
Basically, yeah, that's cool.
Yep. And so then when I went to university, did finance and accounting, double major there, my dad urged me not to take over the restaurant. You know, went to work for Boeing right out of college. And
that's okay, it. So when you were at Boeing, what's something that you learned at Boeing that you can take to a smaller company?
Whew. Boeing, you know, Boeing was literally, it was Excel. I was building financial models. They just happened to be $1 billion financial models. And I'm taking inputs from multiple organizations. I was fortunate enough to work on some of the most unbelievable programs at Boeing. Like I was part of the team that launched the new Dreamliner, the 787. So literally building financial models, you know, people think that because it's Boeing, it's different. And people think because you're a small business, it's different. Numbers are numbers, whether they have, you know, 10, 12 digits at the back end or not.
So what were the main KPIs and stuff that Boeing was super interested in?
So a lot of them, obviously, I can't, you know, because it was top secret. Top secret.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, top secret clearance. But
don't go
in
to jail.
General, yeah.
Don't go to jail.
Yeah. Airplane programs being on budget and being late. It was time and material, really. And you know, just like a small business, you always have to track all the little things. How much time is it taking you to do certain things? That's really what we were tracking at Boeing, and that's 100% one for one applicable for all the companies that I consulted for as the CFO.
So why did you end up leaving Boeing?
I wanted to get back to the smaller businesses, the growing businesses, where what you do has a direct correlation to the bottom line of the company and the top line. The end goal was always to start my own company. I don't like being a cog in the wheel. I don't like my name being one of 180,000 employees. So went into running a small oil and gas consulting firm after Boeing, and it was about a 50 person firm. And so it was more my speed. And then after that, I was like, you know what? I want to start my own thing. And that's when I started my outsourced CFO consulting firm.
So you always knew you're an entrepreneur. Like yeah. Most immigrant families yeah. are entrepreneurs. Yeah. So how did you decide that you wanted to first start your CFO, outsourced CFO company, and then now a tech company?
Yeah, so the outsourced CFO company was honestly, and both of them were kind of born out of demand, out of necessity, where my outsourced CFO firm being as an entrepreneur, kind of a thoroughbred entrepreneur, you know, my entire lifelong entrepreneur, my network was always entrepreneurs. So when I moved to Chicago, I was plugged in with my cousin. He ran his own companies. His friends naturally just started growing my network here. And being a token finance guy in a room full of entrepreneurs, usually you don't have a finance entrepreneur. You know, finance, the purpose of finance is to de-risk, right? It's to mitigate risk, identify it, and mitigate it. And for me, I'm a risky finance person. So I was hanging out with a bunch of entrepreneurs, and all these entrepreneurs were like, hey, can you build a financial model for us? Do you know how much money we need to raise? Can you figure out how much money we need to raise? How much money are we burning? All that was super simple stuff, but for them, it was just something that they couldn't even begin to wrap their brain around. So that free advice essentially turned into my consulting firm, where I was like, all right, I think I genuinely have a pretty good sized business here. So I launched it literally because too many people kept asking me to do their stuff for free, that I was like, I'm going to charge all you guys to do this, and grew my firm to 8 full-time equivalents over a span of about 3.5 years. So it was really, really exciting there.
So when you go into, when you look as the CFO, when you were looking at a business, what was like one of the first things that you always looked at when you were talking to a new client?
Expenses was absolutely the first thing. The first thing I, you know, obviously I'm like, send me your P&L. I need to see what is happening with your business. Because a lot of times their P&L, first their books are, they're part of my French, but a shit show. They don't have their stuff organized. They don't have stuff, transactions matched. And then I look at their expenses. I'm like, do you understand you're spending money on X, Y, Z, da, da, da. And then the conversations we have come out of there. I mean, I'll save them $50,000 a year in about an hour of a conversation just by identifying certain things that they should not be paying for, or they're paying too much for, or they need to switch, or stuff like that.
Very valuable conversation. That's going to be so.
So how did you price that?
So initially, my initial pricing was like a full blown hyper sprint audit, where I charged them $3,000 for a week of work. So I would go in there for 5 days, spend all my time for $3,000, and I would audit their entire stuff. I'd look at all their financials, look at their books, look at their pitch decks, look at and coach the CEO on how he was pitching or she was pitching to investors if they were fundraising. I'd talk to certain employees to figure out what their KPIs are. If they didn't have any, I would stand up some KPIs for them, depending on what part of the business they're involved in, sales, marketing, product, whatever it may be. And then I realized I didn't want to do project stuff. I wanted to do more retainer stuff. And so 90% of those clients that I did the three, you know, I called it the 5-day 3K, $3,000 for 5 days, I would charge them $5,000 for an ongoing monthly engagement where I would always be their CFO. So scaled up to some of them that were north of $10,000 a month, but it was always retainer based of how I scaled it after the first couple months.
I like that. Yeah. Let's go back to the room that you were full of with entrepreneurs. I don't know if it was a metaphorical or physical room, but what kind of entrepreneurs were they? Majority. I mean, if it's a room full of people, more likely it's similar.
Yeah. There were a lot of SaaS companies, e-commerce was the first client that I had. It was a custom apparel company. So they provided custom apparel, like custom t-shirts, hats, that kind of stuff on demand printing. And so that was one of my first client. And then, so a lot of those, you know, growing high growth, high burn, you know, high scale Chicago startup companies.
Okay. So, I mean, is that more or less the types of clients that you worked with in the CEO business too? Is that like, as you grew out, did you find most of your clients were SaaS and e-commerce?
Yeah, a good amount of them were, but healthcare companies, huge, huge concentration of healthcare companies, doctor's offices, that kind of stuff, which was, you know, kind of one of those interesting, super, super old school industries that I was like, there's no way I can work with anyone in the healthcare industry, but you know, they have no idea what they're doing with their finances. Mm. So that was actually a very lucrative industry to start tapping into. And so, yeah. And then, you know, we had some construction and stuff like that, but you know, majority was SaaS and e-commerce and, you know, some high growth industries.
I can't imagine a doctor paying you $5,000 a month, but maybe they were. Yeah.
The funniest thing is my highest bills were for the doctor's offices. Cause they were like, they were so happy to not have to worry about a thing when it comes to finance or accounting that they were like, please, whatever you want, do it and be in charge of it. Cause I mean, we were doing a whole ton of work for them with Medicare billing and Medicaid. I know way too much about credentialing than a finance guy should, but we did a lot of lifting.
So were you providing the full back office solution for a lot of these doctors?
Yep. Yep.
What about taxes too? Or was it just the books?
Yeah. So I'm not a CPA, but I hired CPAs. CPAs worked for me. So they would do the year-end taxes, quarterly taxes, all the fine details of the tax side. And I would do a lot of the financial planning and analysis side.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. So that's a full closed system almost.
Yep. So as you were growing, so it obviously just started with you. You got up to 8 people. How did you know you needed to hire people along the way? Did you create a financial plan for yourself?
Kind of in my brain, I guess. I created a financial model where I was like, hey, you know, I can hit this revenue with this many people. But it really was just, I was stressed way too thin. I was working way too much. My clients were calling me way too often. I was sick of hiring more people and training them and standardizing their work, because when I bring on a client, they're signing on for me. They've heard about me, they knew about my services, they knew about the quality. And then when I bring on an employee, you know, because they didn't have all the experience that I had, it was extremely difficult to standardize that. And so I went through a lot of lessons learned just getting my employees up to speed on, you know, the core offering were financial models, projections, forecasts, dashboards, scenarios, that kind of stuff. So that's really was a huge, huge inspiration for what Clockwork became, because collaboration has to be there. You know, if you can't just depend on one person, one CPA, one CFO, if you're doing an outsourced model, what if they get hit by a bus? You don't know the models, you don't know the data, you don't know how they built the models, the input tabs, all this stuff.
Do a lot of people get hit by buses? That seems to be what everybody uses as the example.
No, right? Like, are people getting hit by buses? That's life insurance.
All the time. I mean, you know, it's the bottleneck, right? Like, we're all the bottleneck if we think that we're the only person that could be doing the work. You know, if you don't have a decentralized company and things aren't spread out and you don't have systems, you know, you're going to run into a lot of those problems. And I guess, did you ever see a way to get yourself out of the process, or did you just get out altogether?
Yeah. So I absolutely found a way to get out of it, because I tried every forecasting scenario, metrics, report. I tried every tool in the market, and I was desperately looking for something to get me out of Excel and out of the mundane updating actuals. I mean, that alone, I was like, there has to be a tool that can update the actuals for me. There really wasn't. And I looked into all the background. I literally tried. And when I say I tried them, I it wasn't just a trial. Like, I literally paid for them the whole nine, probably 25 different products over the 4 years that I ran my firm. And not one of them did what I needed to do as a CFO. And by that, I mean, the ease of use. None of my clients wanted to log into those softwares, those platforms, those tools to look at what I needed them to look at.
And when was this?
This was 2015 till 2018 and a half.
Are there any standouts in that lineup of 25 that were just horrible that are still around. This is your time to talk bad about anybody else in the industry.
Yeah, I mean,
we'll just bleep it all out. Next 3 minutes, just say whatever you want. We'll bleep it out.
I mean, I'm not afraid to go toe to toe with anyone in this space. I will say the absolute worst was Drav.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. So, and we have thousands of
clients on Drav. Sponsor alert. There's a sponsor alert. Yeah.
Could be a sponsor. We'll take your mic.
No, I'm kidding.
So yeah, I mean that was by far the worst. But again, it's one of those situations where you have to be a finance person to build a software that does finance, right? You have to have some experience in FP&A or as a CFO, preferably, right? Yeah. And the second you get into any of these other tools, you know they weren't built by CFOs. You know they weren't built by a CPA. You know they weren't built by someone that genuinely has done this for many, many years. Some of the tools that were designed by CFOs, I've tried them. They were just way over the top in terms of complexity. And so finding that happy medium, that balance, is exactly where Clockwork sits.
So how'd you end up exiting from the firm that you built?
So I stood up three separate firms out of my 8 employees, basically gave them all the clients. And two people partnered, and then the rest kind of just divvied up the other clients. And so essentially stood up other outsourced CFO consulting firms that we continue to work with right now.
So you basically decided, I'm gonna build this software product.
Yeah.
Because the outsourced CFO role.
I thought of Clockwork back in 2015. Like within the first 6 months of launching my outsourced CFO firm, Clockwork was already forming in my head. I knew that the demand and the need was huge in terms of finding a software that can actually provide this. And so when I was trying all the other tools, I always had Clockwork in the back of my head. And as I was providing my services for my clients, I was building the product requirements for Clockwork throughout the whole thing. And so 2015, 2016, 2017, I kept trying to like kind of do Clockwork on the side, but literally impossible. You can never focus on two companies at once, especially when you're trying to grow them and start one, right? And so Clockwork was kind of sitting on the sidelines for a while. And then mid 2018 I was like, I literally have to do this. I cannot keep watching the market, because you have all these new entrants coming in the market and they're just eating up VC money for no reason. Their products are horrible. The teams are not experienced in it. And I'm like, I have to throw my ring in the hat and genuinely show people that there's a better way. There's a better tool. There's a better product to do this. And that's exactly what Clockwork's been doing. And this year we launched, I focused 2.5 years on building the product, specifically building the product, getting feedback from customers. And this year we launched earlier this year and we're growing at 40% month over month.
Great, man. You took the ring off of Fadico and threw that in the hat. I know you meant to say threw the hat in the ring, but you said threw the ring.
Oh,
in the
yeah,
hat.
Yeah, yeah.
Got unmarried, you know, you split off this business, got a divorce, threw your ring in the hat, and then went off the
clock. Yeah, that's it. That's it.
Right, tell me about the name Clockwork. How did you come up with that name?
Yeah, so Clockwork is one of those things, right? When you look at, so I'm a huge fan of watches and clocks. I love open face watches
before and rings. And rings too, if you're throwing them in hats. Yeah.
And rings, yeah. And so before I got this Apple Watch, I always had my nice watches, and I love collecting watches. And when you look at a watch, all the gears have to, doesn't matter how big or small they are, they all have to be in sync. They all have to be properly functioning for that watch to tell you the time, for that clock to tell you the time and be accurate. For a business, it's very much the same thing. Your operations, your finance, your product, your service, the entire thing has to operate all in sync and all together. One of the most important parts of any business, if not the most, is cash flow, is projections, is finances. And so that's like the biggest gear that comes with a business. The future of Clockwork will be to touch all the other gears that help a company move and grow. But, you know, businesses need to run like Clockwork and they need to use clockwork to do that.
That's a beautiful analogy, though. I like that.
Thank you.
So you're a CFO and you decide to start a SaaS company. Like, we all have ideas in our head of creating mobile apps and apps and all this stuff, but like, you actually did it. So what's the first step? How'd you like go about making clockwork?
I had to find someone that knew code, that knew how to develop, that knew how to code software. I had consulted for enough tech companies and software companies and SaaS companies to be dangerous, to be able to like be kind of a product manager for it. But I just didn't know how to develop. So I built those product requirements kind of like a VP of product would. And so I had the specs, I had exactly how I wanted to work. I had everything drawn out, had a designer build out the click-through prototype. But the first thing was finding a developer, finding someone that can actually put fingers to keys and some code behind it. But the rest was honestly talking to people. It was talking to my clients, talking to my previous clients, talking to prospective clients, just getting their feedback. The number one thing that I heard from anyone in the space was ease of use, right? They're like, I can't find any tool that doesn't need me to spend hours implementing, hours onboarding. Then they're going to charge me for that. They're going to charge me for the training. They charge me for the support. So that was a huge, huge thing that I wanted to nail down. And so it was ease of use and literally working with Intuit to, you know, we found lines in their API and we're like, guys, can we change this and this and this? And so really, really making sure that the product was 100% baked through before I launched the company as a whole. That was literally step number one.
So what's the best advice someone gave you over the last 3 years?
Users don't know what they're talking about, but you have to listen to users.
That's a good point. No, that's you know, I more or less use the phrase of
that's like our clients.
Yeah, and anybody, and any client, you know, it's people don't usually mean what they say, but you have to figure out what the underlying truth is from what they say versus what they really mean. And I think, mm-hmm. you know, that's more or less an art to figure that out.
Yeah.
To be gracious with it too.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So what is that? Like, so give us an example of something without blowing up somebody's spot. Like, what's something
said? Yeah. So what it was when I was first organizing everything, right? We're talking 2017, 2018 here. The number one thing was ease of use. And so I would always ask, how automatic do you want it to be? Do you want Clockwork to build everything for you, one touch? You don't have to do the projections. You don't have to do the forecast. Clockwork does it all. Every single person said yes. If I can just sign up for a software and it does it all for me, I would love it. I would pay thousands of dollars a month for it if it does that. So I went all in on automation. I'm like, we're going to, and that's why our domain is clockwork.ai, right? I wanted to build as much AI right off the bat without as many data sets as we can find, obviously, but some machine learning into it where it's like as automatic as possible. So we really went all in on that. And when we launched kind of a closed beta, people were like, okay, this is great, but how do I build my assumptions? I'm like, you didn't tell me that you wanted to build assumptions. You said you wanted it to be automatic. They're like, well, I meant automatic, but I still want to be able to customize. And I'm like, oh my gosh. So then the pendulum kind of swung from doing every single thing for them to allowing some customization. And then they wanted customization on the model and the cash flow because Clockwork does both, right? We do the projections and the cash flow. Then we added customization on the model, on the projections. Then they're like, well, we need that on the cash flow. And I'm like, all right, fine. We started going down that path. Then people are like, well, we actually don't need it on the, and I'm like, all right, guys, come on. Let's take things bit by bit by bit. And so my biggest lesson learned there was really dive in. When people say ease of use, the bar, to be honest, because of the industry and because of my, you know, competitors are quite honestly so poorly made products, the bar has been so low in terms of what people are willing to use and put up with. So when we came out there and we're like, hey, 30-second account creation, a lot of people were like, you're full of shit. There's no way I can make an account in 30 seconds. How much time does it take me to map my stuff? How much time? I'm like, it's literally automatic. It's there. And so that's been a huge game-changing thing where the bar's so low, when people say automatic, they just want everything in there. And then they want to play around with it in a sandbox. And so that was a huge learning for us. And that's why this year, when we launched our you know, customization and all the assumptions that you can literally build formulas directly into Clockwork, was a huge, huge catapult for us.
People go into it with assumptions. They assume, you know, if it's done for them, oh, it might not be right.
Yeah.
You know? So you gotta get past that too.
Yeah.
Are you, as a CFO, are you a small chart of accounts guy, or I want as many chart of accounts as possible guy?
I'm a simple chart of accounts guy. I'm a make it where you can forecast enough out of it, but do not be so granular where you're gonna go cross-eyed every single time you pull a P&L or even look at your chart of accounts. And we've had users, holy moly, when they sign up, they create an account and they're like, hey, can you walk me through your account? Because we offer free onboarding, right? We I will literally sit down with any user that signs up and walk them through their Clockwork account and show them how to use it. So we go to the financial model because it pulls their chart of accounts one for one. We open up their revenue, their COGS, their OPEX, and they're like, where are all these? I'm like, this is what you have in your chart of accounts. And a lot of the users are like, I didn't know that. This is horrible. I'm like, well, you're the one that keeps adding these accounts, even though they all have zero balances in them. They keep adding chart of accounts because they think it's going to make their lives easier, but it actually makes your life a lot more difficult to plan. Mm,
preach, 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 preach. That's what I've liked about Clockwork. You know, I personally haven't used it, but there's a lot.
But he's going to tell you why he likes it now.
I can tell the. What is that noise?
We got people doing some lawn work outside, but that's okay because we're talking about Reach reporting right now.
We're not talking about lawn work then.
No. This is our Reach reporting ad. You've never built a report like what Reach can offer because you've never had such an easy access to all your financial data before.
I feel like I already know how to use this product and I haven't started using it.
You want a product that you can use right away, because if it takes a lot of time to do it, accounts don't have that time.
Well, we also don't want to learn new things. A lot of times we just want something to work right out of the box because we spent our whole lives learning new things. We don't want to learn something new when it comes to reporting. We know what we want the report to look like, and now we just want it to be effortless. I think Reach does that.
You can build any metric that you want. So using Excel, but with live accounting data.
Live accounting data.
God, that's pretty accountants cool. Love that.
They do. They love Excel, joining yeah. Live data, Excel-like functionality, and gorgeous presentation. You know, it's like Word, Excel, PowerPoint all working together. Reach is the Microsoft suite of reporting. Sweet. I think that's pretty cool. The clients will absolutely love the reports that I will send them.
But it takes minutes to build and create. So basically, it's not going to take you that much time, and you're going to be able to give them fantastic reports.
So for our firm, at least, the success of our advisory services really relies on a strong relationship, and strong relationships start with communication. You can't just give them data without the visuals, right? They need the visuals. Clients get a deep understanding of their financial situation.
And reporting for clients is tough for a bunch of reasons. It is tough because every client's a little different. So you need a software that can help you standardize some processes and create beautiful reports. And that's what Reach does.
Yeah. The dashboards and reports that kind of tell a story, but turn your custom reports into templates you can automate. I love the customization to their reports too. You can customize your branding. They basically white label everything.
You like custom Jordans?
I do like custom Jordans.
And you like your custom reporting?
Custom Jordans and custom reporting. I can't fathom what they're going to do next.
So go to reachreporting.com and check them out.
Reach Reporting, complex data made simple.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of CPAs, accountants out there that want to provide advisory services, but they're not sure how.
Yeah.
How does Clockwork help them take a step on that journey?
So to be honest, if firms aren't providing advisory services right now, they have a whole lot of work to do to figure out what they can do with Clockwork. We've had so many people that are like, hey, we want to provide advisory. This is going to be a perfect thing. I'm like, awesome. Let's partner. They start paying us. We start helping them onboard. And then they think that they're going to have like 20 clients within 3 months, but 3 months goes by and they have 2 clients on because they're so stuck on all the other aspects of their business. And they don't know that in their mind, they haven't really made that mental shift of, I need to go all in on advisory and genuinely invest my time, my money, my energy to actually start doing advisory. And they keep a lot of bad clients that they shouldn't have, the high suck, high time sink bookkeeping clients or the transactional clients that are taking way too much of their time. But advisory is not something that you can just be like, oh yeah, it's the flavor of the month, right? You know, everyone's talking about advisory for the last couple of years. It's a huge hot item. But if you're not ready to go all in on advisory, and I tell this to prospects all the time, if you're not ready, if this is not a big priority for you to genuinely go all in, don't waste money on any software or on any tool. You genuinely have to shift the way that you think about your practice and how you think about your clients. Because a lot of clients, they're not ready for advisory. They may not be at that stage where they can handle advisory. They're super simple. They're not growing. They're regular small mom and pop shops. So it really has to be a full blown adaptation and launch to incorporate advisory.
So you're talking a lot about the firm owners and their clients. What about the firm employees too?
The one thing I've learned, it's a top down thing. Employees, they don't want to be in Excel. Employees, you know, they don't want to update actuals. They do not want to do it, but they know that if they come up to their firm leadership and they say, hey, we want to start using Clockwork, and the firm leadership is like, yeah, that sounds great, but you still have to bill all these hours and you still have to do all these things and your utilization rate has to be X or Y, and it's not going to go anywhere. It's going to fall flat on its face. So the most success that we've had, like Withum's our largest client, you know, 12th largest CPA firm in the world, top down, you know, we got in front of the right people. They absolutely loved Clockwork and they were like, this is exactly what we need across the board. And so it's a top down approach where the leadership has to be fully supportive and fully bought in, or else, you know, the employees are only measured on what the leadership says they need to be measured on. And if they're not incorporating the efficiency gains with Clockwork, it's just kind of a lose-lose situation.
We talk about the owner's mindset, and for a lot of firms that haven't really gone forward with the advisory, I think a lot of owners and employees tend to be looking backwards, looking at the financials, looking at what already happened, and they have to change the way they look at their business, their clients' businesses. They have to start looking forward. You know, do you find that as an inflection point too? Or that's
100%. You have to be ready, because the difference between finance and accounting, like I always say, is accounting tells you where you've been, what your numbers have been historically. Finance tells you what your numbers are going to be and the decisions you can make from those numbers. Advisory does not live on the accounting side. Advisory lives on the finance side. And that's why Clockwork is a financial planning and analysis platform, right? We make sure that's our brand mission, our objective in the market. Don't call us a cash flow forecasting tool. Don't call us a metrics. Don't call us reporting. We're a full-blown FP&A tool because advisory lives with FP&A. You have to be financial planning mindsetted rather than accounting mindset of where you're just looking at historicals.
So what size of client do you think that they start needing these type of services?
Employee count doesn't really matter, but the second you get in the $2-3 million in revenue, if you don't have some sort of plan or some sort of any, you know, kind of forecast, because assuming they're growing, right? That's always the caveat. It's revenue, but it's also percent growth that they're growing on a year-over-year basis. If you have clients that are growing 10, 15, 20% year over year with their financials, you should have a very, very set plan of what the next 3 to 5 years looks like if they keep operating this way, and what levers they can pull or push if they don't want to keep operating that way. So it's kind of all over the place there.
You got to have a growth mindset from the leadership too at a lot of these
100%,
for a lot of these clients.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's always a size. Sometimes it is a mindset, and you know, some clients that will pay more and they will want to do more if they have that growth, you know, and if they're looking forward.
Yeah, it's super easy to go into advisory when all your clients keep saying, I need projections, I need forecasts, I need scenarios, I need metrics. Because then it's like, okay, flip of the switch, you have 10 clients you can launch with already. But if your clients aren't asking you very proactively for this kinds of stuff, it'll be pretty difficult for a firm to make that switch unless you have clients that want that.
Yeah, because I think the client, like most small firms don't have a lot of clients that need that type of advisory. They need more tax planning advisory and not so much financial planning advisory. And then when you get up to that 3, 4 million, 5 million stretch, that's when they really need it. But if you've been targeting tax clients that aren't necessarily at that level, your client mix isn't going to be right. And that's probably why firms are struggling with advisory, like you said, because they're like, well, my client, they're making $400,000 a year. Like, how am I supposed to do a cash flow forecast for them? They can't afford it, and they probably don't need it at this time. So it's kind of like you have to market and like target a whole nother base of clients if you want to go to the financial planning route.
Well, and it's being comfortable with the value proposition for your clients, right? There are a lot of clients, and I've worked with some of the, you know, I mean, we work with literally some of the smallest firms, these, you know, 1 or 2 people shops, and they're like, oh, my clients, I love this, but I just don't know how my clients can get into it. I don't know if I can sell this to my clients. I'm like, great, let's have a call with one of your clients. And you present it to them and they're like, holy cow, I can get this? You guys can provide this for me? It's like, yeah. This is a solution. This exists. And then it changes the game for them.
Yeah, it's also like, as a CPA, we think like we're cheap and we don't think that clients can like, they're like, I wouldn't pay for this. Why would my clients pay for it? But they probably would.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, if you have that set of clients that are all about 400, you probably do have a subset of clients that would be interested in that. And then you can break off a part of the firm that's, you know, working with those clients and more or less like start a practice within a practice.
Yep, exactly.
So what's like the next step for Clockwork?
So, you know, raise a little bit of money, and by the end of next year, we want to be the market leader. So right now, you know, there are a few bigger names that have raised, you know, money or been around for 10 times longer than we've been around, and they've been kind of just sputtering and, you know, just being the namesake. But we are absolutely on a path for market dominance by the end of next year with all the largest partners. We want to make sure that the top 400 CPA firms know about us, because the number one thing that we get is, where the hell have you guys been? And why haven't I heard about you? Really, really making sure that firms know that there's a better way to do this. There is a better way to provide forecasting projections and dashboards and to continue our growth throughout next year. And then, you know, I want to absolutely blow up. I want to IPO it. I don't want to sell it. I want to genuinely make a huge, huge difference. I want Clockwork to be the hub spot for finance and operations, where we own that entire space under $100 million in revenue. Clockwork is synonymous with finance and operations, just like HubSpot is synonymous with sales and marketing.
I love that.
So the number one, who are you reaching for first? Who are you going to take off of the ladder?
Jarav, for sure.
Where are they in the market right now? I hear their name a lot. Where are they, like, more or less in the market?
So it's kind of a funny thing. They have a bigger brand than they do have a company, because we've never lost a deal to Jarav. Every single company that we go into that they use Jarav, they rip and replace and they use Clockwork. And it's just with one of our potential big partners, I won't say their name, but they're talking to them as well. And they're like, well, AICPA is partnering with them and they invested in them. So obviously you're going to tout what you invest in. And unfortunately, the response was, yeah, because they're the only player in this space. They're the only company that they know that does some sort of financial planning analysis for these CPA firms. And so quite honestly, I think we'll pass them up in revenue and customers relatively quickly. It's more so the brand, just because they've been around and spending crazy amounts of money and giving out stuffed toys and stuff like that for so long.
Dressing up.
So we're not getting plops from you, is what I'm hearing?
No.
No, we're going to get watches. We're going to get some Rolex.
When am I getting a Rolex?
Yeah, we'll send you watches, something that actual adults
will send us use. Watch winders, right? That's
yeah. Yeah, I think we'll surpass Drav pretty quickly. And then, you know, we want to be like Adaptive Insights, Anaplan, some of the biggest names in the space that are focused on the $100 million and up market, where we want to be those for the $100 million and below.
I noticed you guys have Sage Intacct coming soon. Is that to get upwards in the market?
Exactly. Yeah.
So mostly your client base is using QuickBooks or Xero?
QuickBooks Online and Xero. Yep.
Yeah. What would you say percentage wise that are on Xero?
95% are QBO, maybe 5% are Xero.
Yeah, that's probably reflective of
the market.
Yeah.
Very much so. We're in our little Xero bubble here, but
yeah,
holding it strong. So, yeah, I mean, high growth though. This is like, so tell us a little bit about your growth, you know, as a company. Where are you guys at now, and where were you at when you first started?
Yeah, I mean, you know, earlier this year we were as close to Xero as you could get. The first few months we had 500% growth, but since then 40% growth month over month. I've been able to do this with literally 5 full-time employees.
Less than your other company.
Huh?
Less than the other company.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, product-led growth is a very buzz term. And, you know, fortunately for us, we've been able to live it.
Beautiful.
So where... So how do you get like in front of Withum and these other CPA firms?
To be honest, it's all our entire, we haven't spent a dollar in digital ads. We haven't spent, it's all been cold emailing and referrals, word of mouth and cold emails. We haven't been to one big conference. We will start in 2022. To be honest, people just love using, I mean, we have average logins per month is north of 12 per account. Per user. So we have people that are literally logging in 12 times a month into their Clark account. I could count on one hand how many clients logged into their QuickBooks Online once every year. So, you know, people love us. So they tell everyone. They tell it's word of mouth and cold emails, which, to be honest, cold emails is probably 10% of what we're doing, but 90% is word of mouth.
I love that.
I know of a podcast you guys can put the microphone on too.
There we go.
Some ad. Yeah.
So, oh, we'll take your money, baby.
Do you have some plans to beef up, I guess, sales and marketing? Because that's obviously the next step.
For sure. Yeah. Right now I'm looking for a director of growth / digital marketing. So I want to bring on a marketer, brought on an account executive within the last month who's been phenomenal. And so really, really growing the marketing side, because we do a ton of content marketing as well. We're not just a software. We provide value across the board, whether you pay us or not. I mean, you can go to our blog and read blogs all day, every day. And we have tons of content, tons of value that we provide, that we create in this market. So I want to keep really, really leaning into that, to be a voice, to be a brand in the industry, where even if you're not a Clockwork user or Clockwork subscriber, you still get some value from working with us. So I want to really, really beef up a lot of the marketing that we do. Right now, it's literally myself and my VP of product, who actually came from Fathom, who do a lot of our marketing, blog posts, stuff like this. I love doing podcasts, but really building the brand and then building the marketing side of the team is pretty much all we need, because the product kind of sells itself. So we don't need 20 salespeople to hit a million, you know, in monthly recurring, right? We can do it pretty nimbly.
So give our listeners, before we go, one piece of advice for our CPA accounting listeners, from all your wisdom. Daddy's wisdom corner.
It is not as hard as you think it is to offer advisory.
I love it.
Daily practice.
I love it. Don't be scared.
Yeah. Do not be scared.
Okay. Tell us where we can find you all over the interwebs.
Well, first, yeah, the blog, right? I think that's a good place that we can put that in the show notes too, the blog that you mentioned.
Yeah, clockwork.ai/blog. Clockwork.ai is our website. You can find us literally clockwork.ai on Instagram, clockwork.ai on Twitter. We're active across all social media platforms. You can even find myself, you know, Fadi Hawatma on Instagram, and email us at hello@clockwork.ai. And, you know, you'll get in touch directly with our team.
That's amazing.
Thank you. This has been amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you guys.
Love it. Really I'm gonna try clockwork now. Shit.
Nice. I love it.
It'll be great.
It's not Ackerman. It's not as hard as you think it would be.
I can't even use a computer, so somewhere you'll have to come down and help me.
Yeah. There we go.
I'll get my dad to help. This has been amazing. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you guys. This was really awesome.